I think I mentioned last week that I've been noticing a certain theme that's been running through almost all of my talks this month. Anybody else notice a theme? Maybe? What I notice is the Buddha's teachings on emphasis on the great importance of including yourself in your circle of care. If you look back at some of the other talks, you'll see that this is the intention of focusing on your own practice or your own development or bhavana, B-H-A-V-A-N-A, bhavana. Bhavana is a Pali term for development, and it means development of the mind, but also a process of awakening, bhavana. And bhavana is often translated into English as meditation, the word bhavana, but of course it's much more than this. And I like the way Amadeo Solo Laris describes it. He says, bhavana means to cultivate and develop the vast potential of the mind in order to overcome the unsatisfactory nature of the internal and external circumstances in which we find ourselves. So that was a great example of what that means. And the idea here tonight that I want to talk about with boundaries is that we can't develop our own minds very well when we're constantly depleting ourselves by trying to do too much or by trying too hard to take care of others at the detriment to ourselves and our own practice. Okay. And when we can't care for ourselves by making our own well-being and practice and health a priority, both mentally and physically, we're not going to be able to offer much to others. We're not going to be able to offer a more kind, calm, balanced presence rather than, you know, being a kind of exhausted cranky pants. Right. And as you may have guessed, this is something I've been working on in my own personal life, especially in the last several years, actually. It's been a theme since the demands on my time and energy seem to have really been increasing. And so what this has meant is that I've needed to constantly assess and readjust and discover new ways of offering myself my precious time and energy. It's like a constant assessment of how to do that. And part of what this has required of me is something I've historically not been very good at, which is setting boundaries. Terrible at it. I have been historically. I've gotten better. I was very lucky to marry a very wise, wonderful man who I consider kind of a boundary king. And he's been my mentor in this area for about 20 years or so. And because I believe in many ways we marry our opposites, I think I've been a really good mentor for him at helping him to loosen his boundaries, his strong boundaries. We've worked together well that way. So tonight I wanted to offer you some thoughts about boundaries from the teachings. And before I do, I wanted to define a bit what it means when we talk about boundaries. So I looked up some definitions of the word that I thought were interesting. And the definitions include something that indicates the farthest limit, as in a border, something that shows where one area ends and another area begins, and a point or limit that indicates where two things become different. Point or limit that indicates where two things become different. The word boundary is also made up of two root words, bound and airy, A-R-Y. And the word bound means things like tied up, inseparably connected with, attached to. And airy, A-R-Y, means pertaining to, connected with, or contributing to for the purpose of. And if you'll stick with me with that. In a way, the actual word itself is pointing to a sense of being tied to, connected to, bound up with in some way, and about discerning where the limits to this tying and knotting begin and end. So when does someone else's sense of self become too intimately intertwined with or bound up with, or in some way crosses into our own personal sense of self? Right? This can also involve crossing the line of where we feel safe when we're in our home, which is right here in our bodies. This is our home. And maybe when our home feels like it's being invaded in some way, you know, or trampled on. So two very relative or simple examples of this might be when someone's cigarette smoke, for instance, is interfering with your enjoyment of your dinner, or when someone is in a store is having a really loud conversation on their cell phone. So in these examples, the secondhand smoke is literally crossing a personal boundary by entering your actual physical space. It's entering your nose and lungs. It is in your actual body, right? And the same thing with loud conversation. We experience in our bodies the vibration of sound. The vibration shows up as sound shows up as a vibration. So when there's a loud conversation, not only is it distracting mentally, but it's physically vibrating in our bodies, right? Disturbing our silence, if you will. So those are both examples of when our physical boundaries are being violated. And of course, this can go to the extreme with actual violence, for instance. But this can also include other types of crossing over the line, taking up space in another person's world, if you will. So some questions you might consider as I go along: is someone taking up an unfair amount of your personal space or your time in your life? Or are they taking up too much of your emotional space or energy? Is someone reaching in too close to your heart? So maybe they're squeezing your heart with critical remarks, maybe. Or too much advice giving. Or maybe on the other hand, they're asking for too much help. Too much help. To turn this around now, you might consider, are you doing some of these things yourself? Right? Are you taking up an unfair amount of someone's personal space or time? Are you taking up too much of their emotional space or energy? Something to just consider in your relationships. Are you reaching in too close to someone's heart? Maybe offering too many criticisms or judgments or advice giving, or, you know, are you asking for too much help from someone, relying on someone too much, right? Another way we can tie ourselves or bind ourselves to others is through what I call enmeshment. And this is where there's a kind of an inappropriate merging of self and other. And this can take many forms. So for instance, maybe your spouse or your best friend tells you what to think about all the time. That's an inappropriate enmeshment. Maybe a relative or friend shares way too much information with you or asks you for too much information, personal information. It's getting a little too close, right? Enmeshed. Maybe someone corrects the way you speak to your children in front of your children, possibly. Maybe your coworker asks you to help her with her work, but she's really asking you to do it for her, right? It can also mean an unhealthy enmeshment of what you consider me or mine. So something you consider an extension of you, which is another way that we create a self. So for instance, this could be your political party. Is it a extension of you? Consider that, right? Do you identify with it? I am such and such. That's who I am. That's my identity. Or maybe your sports team, right? I'm that. And we get really upset, you know, if anything happens to that. Or maybe your country, or your children, your friends, groups that you belong to. Maybe your work. You know? And the number of boundaries that we can define are actually endless. And it's actually a really powerful exercise to start becoming mindful of what some of these look like in your own life. For instance, you might start to ask yourself, what are my actual boundaries? Have I ever considered that? What are they? What have I defined as mine? What have I defined as mine? Do I recognize when these boundaries are being or have been violated? And even how might I be violating other people's boundaries? How might I be doing that? So just some things to consider. It's also important to remember that emotional boundaries are actually incredibly complicated because everyone has different personal history. and their own individual causes and conditions, and the boundaries of others might not be so clear. We all have different ideas of what boundaries should look like, right? And so it's helpful to remember that. My boundary might be not what yours is, so that therefore I'm going to cross that because I'm not aware. So it's really helpful to be able to start to recognize and know your own boundaries, as well as being mindful of trying to honor those of others. Having said that, it's also really important to and essential to forgive yourself when you unintentionally cause harm by crossing someone's boundary, which we're all bound to do. Have we all done it? I've done it. I know. And it hurts when I find out or discover that I've done it. It hurts. So forgive yourself for not knowing what you didn't know, you know, and then try to be mindful the next time. Oh, okay, I shouldn't do that, you know, but it's not a way to beat yourself up for it. We also have to be kind to ourselves when we sometimes unintentionally set ourselves up and don't always know how to best protect ourselves from having our lines crossed. God, I do that one all the time. I should have said that, or should have done that, or why did I? And then I beat myself up for not protecting my own boundaries. So we have to learn to forgive ourselves for that as well. So over the years, some of the questions that I've heard students come up with when they're struggling to understand boundaries through the teachings are things like, if there isn't a solid, permanent, reliable self, what the hell am I protecting, right? And the Buddha says we aren't separate, we are all essentially one, so why is there a need for boundaries? These are just some of the questions. And the Buddha says that we're supposed to love others like a mother might love their child, so when I say no to someone, I feel mean or unkind or even totally evil and selfish. If I want to maintain a sense of myself as a kind person and have other people see me as a kind person, don't I need to sacrifice my own feelings and needs and put the needs of others first? Okay. So I'd like to explore some of these questions tonight. And I'll start with that first one. If there isn't a solid, permanent, reliable self, what am I protecting? As most of you know, the Buddhist teachings about anatta, no self, are often really the most complicated teachings and probably the most misunderstood of the teachings, the most confusing. And the first misconception is that the Buddha is somehow saying that we don't exist. We don't have a self. Of course we do. We all are here. We all exist in this time, as do all the chairs and the walls and everything here. It does actually exist. It's not in our head. And we do exist in each moment, and we all need to live our actual lives. And we need to feed ourselves and go to work and pay our bills. So the Buddha acknowledged that we all have very real and unique lives and that we are all very precious and important to the whole. We're all precious to the whole. And this is the important part. We are also all constantly and forever changing, just like everything else around us. The chairs, the walls, all of it. You know, it's all going to change. It's in constant flow. It's a constant flow of life. Everything, we are impermanent, and so is everything else. Some of you may have heard this quote before from Stephen Joseph, who explains it this way. He says, we can still function as an apparent separate entity while enjoying the parallel reality of our infinite vast presence. We need both realms. When the cop pulls us over, we still need to show him our license, not simply point to the sky. So while we are constantly changing, we also need to honor, respect, and cherish, and definitely protect the unique, amazing, actual, real person who's right here with all of our past conditioning and everything that's made us who we are. When the suffering of self comes in is whenever we're trying to pin anything down, including ourselves, when we're trying to hold on to everything, trying to put labels on ourselves and then believe those labels and make them solid. The Buddha also taught us that along with trying to pin ourselves down, one of the main ways that we suffer is when we try to create a self that is either better than or worse than. When we compare, there's so much suffering. So just for a moment, I want you to just consider how often you do this. How often are you comparing? How am I doing as compared to other people, how they're doing? This might be constant, right? And we tend to do this with almost everyone in our lives, don't we? Even with whole groups of people. Just check it out in your own life. And, you know, we all tend to make these evaluations, even if they're very subtle, and it affects all of our relationships, and it also affects how we show up for these relationships. What this means is that it tends to affect our sense of boundaries, okay? So if you think about it, whenever we're breaking our boundaries, we're often doing this kind of comparing. So for instance, we might believe that we're helping, quote unquote, because we think someone else is less than and needs our help. Okay, that's a way of comparing and breaking our boundaries. Or we might be making ourselves and our needs in some way less than that of somebody else's. So it's either I need to do this for them or allow them to do this or that because clearly they can't or are unable to do it for themselves, that kind of thinking. Or I need to do this for them and allow them to do something because they are better and bigger and more important than I am, so I need to allow it, my boundaries to be somehow broken. And whenever you're breaking your boundaries in this way, you might also notice if you are in some way believing that you are supposed to or should be a certain way. Just consider it. So you might consider when you are creating some kind of a label or identity of self that might, for instance, be kind, humble, selfless, or maybe saint-like, when maybe your heart really isn't in it, okay? But there's that label of nice, right? In those instances, you might consider, am I doing this or allowing this because it's really the right thing to do, because it's making me feel better, or am I really more concerned about how I am being perceived? Check out your intention. Why are you doing this particular thing? And by the way, maybe the most painful part of this perception is about how you might be perceiving or judging yourself, right? In your own mind. So whenever you're considering doing something or allowing something, breaking some kind of a personal boundary, it's helpful to be aware of what you're believing about the other person or people, and especially about yourself. So really important to check out your belief system. What am I believing here? You might even ask, what label or identity am I pasting on myself, if you will? So for instance, if I do this, that person or even others will think I'm fill in the blank. If I do this, other people are going to think, fill in the blank. I can ask that question during the day. Or another one is, if I say no, that person or even others will think that I'm fill in the blank. What do you think about yourself when you say no? Consider that. What kind of even phrases or words do you use to describe yourself sometimes? Could be empowering. It could be a sense of judgment, right? So one of the main ways the suffering of self manifests is by believing that because we are somehow, quote, less than, we're not allowed to protect ourselves or to say no. We're not allowed. And whenever we're perceiving ourselves as less than, our boundaries tend to become really fragile, if you can imagine boundaries, or thin, or they tend to break easier, okay? On the opposite end of this, whenever we're believing that we are somehow better than, we might believe that others' boundaries aren't as important as ours. Consider that. That person's boundary is not as important as mine. Or maybe you don't even consider it. So we might believe, for instance, consciously or even unconsciously, that we have a right to break those boundaries because we are in some way more powerful or important. And, you know, this doesn't need to be egregious like a Harvey Weinstein type of scenario. It can be more subtle. For instance, we might believe we can ask some people for more favors because they so often say yes, they'll do it. That person will do it. I'll ask her or him. Or take advantage of their time or property in some way. Or maybe, you know, take a bigger piece of the cake or that more comfortable chair, right? I deserve that more comfortable chair. If we're feeling less than, sometimes we might believe that this is okay. We might give in to some people's requests for favors or our time. I'll do it, you know. Or we may in some way agree that we deserve the smaller, less comfortable chair or whatever it is. I'll take that. You take the bigger piece. We might even think we deserve it when people steal in some way from us. And stealing can be many things. It can be our time, our space, our experience, our services, maybe even our personal bodies. We may even need to feel the need to apologize for taking up too much space, since clearly the other person or people deserve so much more space than we do. Okay? It's just one of these attitudes. And yet whenever we're doing this, either way, making ourselves less than or more than, when we're comparing, what we're forgetting is what I consider one of the most important teachings of the Buddha, which is this. You can search through the entire universe for someone who is more deserving of your love and affection than you are yourself. And that person is to be not to be found anywhere. You yourself, as much as anyone in the entire universe, deserve your love and affection. Okay. I know that's a hard one for some people. This means that you yourself are just as deserving of love and your sense of safety or boundary as anyone. Even, for instance, children who might be suffering in a war in another part of the world, actually, they deserve love and a sense of safety. And guess what? So do you. So do you. You are not less important, and you are not more important either. You're not less important, and you're not more important. Also, whenever we say yes, when we really mean no, when we're in some way allowing our own feelings and needs to come second, labeling ourselves as less than or nice, what we're doing in essence is harming ourselves. And this, according to the teachings, doesn't help anyone. Harming ourselves doesn't help anyone. It's actually the very opposite of what we're trying to practice here. It's helpful to remember. And our mindfulness practice can be really useful here because we can really start to examine very honestly what brings us suffering and what brings us happiness in our lives. That's what we're doing when we practice. So you might, for instance, notice what does it feel like in the mind, heart, and body when you say yes to something that you really wanted to and maybe could have said no to? What does it feel like in the body? So not necessarily in the heart, you go right to the mind and the body. What does the body feel like when I say yes, when I really could have or wanted to say no? Check that out. Some telltale signs of the suffering we feel when we're not honoring our own boundaries can include a sense of confusion or resentment, frustration, anger, and then sometimes even a sense of sadness or despair or depression. Can lead into depression when we're saying yes to so much stuff when we really want to say no. So whenever you're sensing this, you might consider what you're believing about why you needed to say yes. So again, we're checking out our bodies and then we're checking out our beliefs. What am I believing? So again, sometimes we're saying yes to things or allowing things not because how it's going to land on the other person, but how we ourselves are going to feel about ourselves. Check that out, right? It's more how am I going to feel about myself if I do this. And again, we might not want to face the negative label we tend to put on ourselves. Might be, I'm a mean person, or I'm selfish, or I'm not nice. Those kind of thoughts. And very often, we might also be very concerned about how the other person is going to react even though saying yes to something we don't want to do is going to be more harmful to ourselves, right? Pema Chodron, one of my favorite nuns, as you all know, says that one of the reasons we let other people break our boundaries is because we don't want to face the challenging emotions that come with rocking someone else's boat. Right? And she says, trying to smooth everything out to avoid confrontation, not to rock the boat, is not what's meant by compassion or patience. It is what is meant by control. Then you are not trying to step into unknown territory to find yourself more naked with less protection and therefore more in contact with reality. Instead, you use the idiot forms of compassion and so forth just to get ground. So the Buddha teaches us that we are not responsible. We are not responsible for the reaction of others. That is theirs to work on, and our reaction is ours to work on. That's ours. You might remember the talk last week, the Acrobat Sutra, the balance. That's theirs. We have ours, they have theirs. Chogyam Trungpa, who founded Shambhala meditation and who's Pema Chodron's teacher, find a really funny phrase that I love and I often remind myself of, which is idiot compassion. It's one of the sticky note phrases that I look at often because I do it so often. I have idiot compassion a lot. And Pema describes it, idiot compassion, this way. She says, it refers to something we all do a lot of and call it compassion. In some ways, it's what's called enabling. It's the general tendency to give people what they want because you can't bear to see them suffering. This is when we avoid conflict and protect our own good image by being kind when we should definitely say no. Compassion doesn't only imply trying to be good. When we find ourselves in an aggressive relationship, we need to set clear boundaries. The kindest thing we can do for everyone concerned is to know when to say enough. Many people use Buddhist ideals to justify self-debasement. In the name of not shutting our heart, we let people walk all over us. There are times when the only way to bring down barriers is to set boundaries. I love that. There's also this story that comes from one of the Buddhist sutras, where there's 50 bodhisattvas on a ship, and there's a thief who the captain sees is about to kill all these bodhisattvas so that he can take over the ship. Okay. So now, of course, the Buddhist precepts tell us and ask us not to kill. But in this case, to prevent the lives of 50 people from being taken, the captain ends up killing the thief. And according to the story, it was apparently the only way to prevent him from killing all the others, the only way. And the point of this story was to say that, though it was incredibly difficult, the motivation for this act blossomed out of compassion. Not only to save the 50 people, but so that the thief would not suffer the bad karma of killing these 50 bodhisattvas. So in the same way, whenever we're not saying no or letting people know that they're in some way crossing our boundaries, we are in essence fueling their behavior and not allowing them to understand that what they're doing is causing harm, right? We're not allowing that. And so they might continue to break not only your boundary in the same way, but the boundaries of others because you're not speaking up. And again, to quote Pema, she says, instead of offering a friend medicine, bitter though it may be when ingested, you feed them more poison. At the very least, you don't take it away from them. This is not compassion at all. It's selfishness, as you're more concerned with your own feelings than attending to your friend's actual needs. Isn't that interesting, that last part? Check that out. Are you protecting your own sense of shakiness, like, I don't want to do this? In the same way, the teachings urge us to make an effort to not hold that other person or people with contempt or to feel aversion towards them. So when we're saying no, we're also practicing having compassion for the other person who might have to struggle with our no in their own way and who might have to then struggle with changing their behavior. When we tell them no, they have to change. That's hard. So we have compassion for that person. So standing up for ourselves whenever our boundaries are being violated can be actually a strong act of compassion for both ourselves and the other person. So hard to remember that. Can be really a true act of compassion. And it's really our responsibility to let other people know how we want to be treated and how we think others should be treated as well. That's our responsibility. People are not mind readers, sadly, right? I also want to say here that I don't want this story about the thief to encourage a violent way of saying no. Please don't go out and punch somebody or get yourself arrested in some way. You know, there's actually a real art to setting boundaries, and our mindfulness practice can really be useful here. So when we're setting boundaries, our practice can help us to learn to lean into the sacred pause, the sacred pause. So we learn to take a step back before we automatically react and discern what might be the best and kindest response for ourselves and others. So it's important to, before you say no or create a kind of boundary, it's really important to take that pause and use wise discernment. Through the practice, we learn to take care of ourselves first. And we do this by breathing, you know, calming the mind and the body so that we're relaxed. And by actually nurturing, being kind to our own sense of hurt. It's hard. You know, somebody might be crossing our boundaries and it feels really painful. And so we have to give ourselves that kindness and care, right? And then we need to look into what we're believing about ourselves, the situation, the other person. Check out what we're believing that's causing the hurt. And then from that place, we can wisely respond and do the right thing. Okay? This doesn't, of course, mean that we never put our own needs aside and take care of others or be there for them or do something kind for them. Of course, this doesn't mean that. But when we do, it should be a choice. It should be a choice that feels good for both ourselves and others. You should feel good about doing this, you know. As the Buddha taught about generosity or dana of any kind, the giving should always bring happiness for both yourself and others. Is that interesting to remember? Whenever you offer something, it should bring you happiness, and it should bring the other person happiness, that you're dana. If it doesn't, it's simply done out of a sense of obligation, and it's not likely going to be the best or healthiest choice. So maybe you can consider that, just that one thing this week. When am I doing something out of a sense of obligation? And when I'm offering something, am I doing it, you know, offering part of myself, opening up my boundaries, my personal space, or whatever it is, my time? Am I doing it out of a sense of this feels really good because I'm offering this? Or is it out of a sense of grudging up obligation? Right? So I think I'm going to end there tonight and offer you all just a meditation to end. So, and invite you into sit. Just taking a nice deep breath in, deep breath out. Letting the body and mind settle, letting the shoulders drop. And for those of you who would like to, as always, I'd like to invite you to place one hand on the heart and one hand on the belly. Just breathe into the fingers. And really connect to your body, your heart. Breathing, letting everything settle. Really bringing a sense of kindness to the heart as well. No judgment of yourself at all, just an inquiry, kind inquiry. So the first inquiry is to ask yourself, what are my actual boundaries? What are my boundaries? Do I have boundaries? What are they? Or maybe a way to investigate this is, what do I want to protect? What's important to me? And you might consider, how do I recognize when these boundaries are being or have been violated, crossed? What does it feel like when these boundaries are crossed, or when I allow these boundaries to be crossed in some way? You might even consider, what would it be like to actually tell someone how you really feel, to assert your boundaries. What would it feel like? You might notice what comes up, what kind of an identity might even come up when you consider it even. Notice what you might be believing about telling someone how you really feel about your boundaries. Just notice what comes up. No judgment. You might even consider the scenario. What would it look like or feel like to actually assert these boundaries? Remembering that it's important for you to have these boundaries in a healthy way. And if difficulty comes up, see if you can hold that with kindness and compassion. It's really hard to do this sometimes, a lot of times. So maybe setting an intention to be kind to yourself and others, or maybe taking small steps to maybe assert your boundaries a little more in some way, maybe even in your own heart and mind. Set that intention. And finally, just listening to these words, one of my favorite poets, Naomi Shihab Nye, who writes about the art of disappearing. When they say, "Don't I know you?" say no. When they invite you to the party, remember what parties are like before answering. Someone is telling you in a loud voice they once wrote a poem. Greasy sausage balls on a paper plate, then reply. It is not that you don't love them anymore. You're trying to remember something too important to forget. Trees, the monastery bell at twilight. Tell them you have a new project. It will never be finished. When someone recognizes you in a grocery store, nod briefly and become a cabbage. When someone you haven't seen in 10 years appears at the door, don't start singing him all your new songs. You will never catch up. Walk around feeling like a leaf. Know you could tumble at any second. Then decide what you want to do with your time. I hope you enjoyed this talk. These talks are always offered freely so that no one is ever denied access to them. And your support, or dana, also makes a big difference. Dana is the ancient Pali word for spontaneous generosity of heart. If you feel inspired to support these talks by offering dana, you can do so by visiting my website at www.mindfulvalley.com. Thank you so much.